This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, hot mic hacked emails. What both presidential candidates would have preferred remained private have become public. Is the media treating the information differently, and if so, why? We'll talk about it with Fox News commentator and media consultant Lee Speakerman in just a moment. Also, in the wake of the revelations of inappropriate and reprehensible comments from Donald Trump, some Christian leaders are suggesting the Christian thing to do is not vote or write in a candidate of their own. Others say we must make a choice, as difficult as it is, from what is before us. Is there a biblical response? We'll talk about it with Don Black, president and CEO of Cornerstone Television. And we touched on this yesterday, but one of the most significant differences between the two presidential candidates was made during Sunday night's debate. Kathy Ruse, senior fellow for legal studies here at the Family Research Council, explains. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics, our guests, the information that we have available there for you, quite a bit, by the way, so I would encourage you to take a look at it. Again, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, another batch of hacked Clinton campaign emails was released from WikiLeaks today. The first batch came on Friday, the same day that revelations were made about Donald Trump and the video. And this is the third batch coming today regarding emails from the Clinton campaign and John Podesta. So is there a difference in the way the mainstream media is dealing with hot mic or hacked emails? Here to talk about it is Lee Speakerman, a Fox News commentator and media consultant. Lee, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, you know, look, both these campaigns are, in my view, are, I mean, they've got some serious problems with stuff that they would prefer to have been kept under wraps, and now the public is seeing them, and I think rightfully so. I think the public needs to see what they're dealing with in terms of these candidates. But is the mainstream media dealing with these things in different ways?
Well, you know, that's almost, I know you didn't mean it as a rhetorical question, but it almost is one. I mean, the sensationalism attached to the tape that was uncovered of Donald Trump compared to the egregious email chain that we have from Hillary Clinton and her campaign, not even on the same planet in terms of magnitude, but the media is certainly playing up the Trump audio much more. Now, admittedly, when you have audio or you have video, and television is a visual medium, audio medium, you can probably expect a little bit more play. But in terms of actual significance, what we saw today is that what we already knew to be a highly politicized Department of Justice and an FBI director basically cowering under that. I mean, it's obvious that that's why Jim Comey didn't attempt to prosecute this case or make a criminal referral, because it was quite clear that the Loretta Lynch Justice Department was not going to prosecute. And so why go out on a limb? So now we see that the campaign, Robby Mook, was in communication with the Department of Justice. One more example of really highly improper ex parte communication. And on top of that, of course, earlier we found out that Bill Clinton went on a government jet with Loretta Lynch a few days before Comey made his announcement and met with her for 40 minutes on a government jet, just grossly inappropriate. And we're just seeing that, you know, that continue to play out, more verification of how bad things really are.
Now, Sunday night, Donald Trump, you know, as he should have been, he was on the defensive for the revelations of statements that he had made. But he kind of fired back at one point regarding the emails, because Friday, that was the first dump had come of these emails. And so they were out there at the same time the audio from his video was. And I've got a clip. I think we have this clip of him responding, inquiring of Anderson Cooper about these emails. Let's listen to this clip from Sunday night.
I'd like to know, Anderson, why aren't you bringing up the emails? I'd like to know. Why aren't you
getting to the bottom?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And it hasn't been finished at all.
Ken Karpowitz has a question.
It's nice to one on three.
You know, the media is a convenient punching bag, but I have to say, I think Donald Trump has a point in the way the media has been handling these emails of Hillary Clinton's campaign, because mostly what you see is this coming from conservative news outlets that are digging into these now. I guess we're up to close over 5,000 emails that have been released, and supposedly there's a lot more to come.
Well, if it wasn't for Trey Gowdy's committee, which of course the Hillary Clinton campaign called a witch hunt, we wouldn't even know about the private server that Hillary had. And if it weren't for folks like Breitbart and others that are pursuing these freedom of information requests, we wouldn't even have a scintilla of the information that we have now about the egregious conduct of Hillary Clinton. And, you know, Donald Trump had to call this out during the debate. There's, you know, it's very clear to me as a person who came out of the media realm that basically the entire establishment media has come to the collective conclusion that the normal journalistic standards don't apply anymore, that it doesn't count, quote-unquote, this time. We have to stop Donald Trump. And so there's hardly even a patina of objectivity anymore. And if you watch the three network evening newscasts, which across those three aggregate 24 million viewers every night, so certainly not an insignificant platform, it's as if you're watching a Hillary Clinton campaign commercial. Some of the openings to the newscast, before they even get into the story, look like a campaign ad against Donald Trump. So it's not even close. The New York Times, which incredibly is still considered the agenda setter for a lot of news coverage, its largest shareholder and financial rescuer is Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim, who's a multimillion-dollar contributor to Hillary's campaign, who's profited prodigiously from NAFTA. So the conflict of interest, the lack of objectivity in the establishment media is stunning. And Donald Trump in that debate did a fantastic job of calling them out. He was right on target. And he said a lot of things that I think millions of voters have either understood or sensed for a long time. And he finally said them, and they needed to be said, and they were not in the least bit unfair. They were completely accurate.
Lee, let me ask you a question regarding the media. As a former journalist, I mean, you've been involved in the media. Let me ask you this. Is it fair game for the media? You got a hot mic that reveals, I think, some character issues that Donald Trump has. You have hacked emails that WikiLeaks has gotten from Clinton's campaign that shows the underbelly of her operation. Is that fair game for the media?
Well, of course, I actually think both are fair game, but you also have to put them in context. And the worst, one of the worst things that the establishment media continues to do is create false equivalencies. I mean, for instance, they made a big deal out of $250,000 that was in question with the Trump charity, and even that was specious, but they made a big deal out of a $250,000 question when Bill Clinton received $500,000 for one speech after Hillary Clinton approved the Russians buying the North American Uranium Company. And on top of that, they got millions of donations from Russian-related parties involved in that business transaction to the foundation. So to create an equivalency between that and the Donald Trump issue is outrageous, but they couldn't wait to do it. The media is always looking for a morsel. They're scrounging for a morsel on Donald Trump to create an equivalency with the latest affirmation of egregious conduct by Hillary Clinton. But of course it's fair game. You know, when you say anything these days, especially if you're in the national limelight, you better plan for it to be recorded. If you write an email, you better plan for it to be hacked. And it was very poor judgment by Donald Trump 11 years ago. But, you know, I say thank the Lord for Romans 8. You know, there is no condemnation for those in Christ. And Donald Trump is a Christian. That's why he has overwhelming evangelical support, or certainly a big reason why. And he's also a very different man, having been married to Melania Trump for 11 years, than he was when he made that statement. And I think he'll frankly bring to the White House a very different attitude toward his marriage than, unfortunately, we saw with Bill Clinton and his. And we later found out Al Gore and his marriage.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Lee Speakerman, my guest. Lee, all right, what is it? Is it just because Donald Trump, certainly he's not a conventional conservative. He's not part of the Republican establishment. Why is the media so hostile toward him? And I have to say, I believe it is quite evident. But is it just because he's not progressive and he doesn't match up with their agenda? Is that what it is?
It is that, and I think because they believe, they know that he will upend the established order, which has been extremely detrimental to the average American. We have a noxious nexus between Wall Street donors and the political class in Washington, D.C., and the system as it is has been very good for them, but it's been lousy for the American people. I mean, one quick example. You hear on the media all the time talk about white working-class voters. When was the last time you heard black working-class voters? They want to categorize everybody. The truth is that white working-class voters and black working-class voters in this country are both being hosed by a rigged system. The media is in bed with all of these political consultants and lobbyists. The New York-based Wall Street donors are very much ensconced in the current system and benefit enormously from it. The financial sector now is twice as big a part of the economy as it's ever been in modern history. So we have things out of balance in this country, and the establishment media is completely captivated by the political class and the lobbyists and the donors up on Wall Street. They don't want to see the system disrupted. They know Donald Trump really will make fundamental change. And to one of your points about Donald Trump not being a traditional conservative, I'll take a little different perspective on that. What's been passing for conservatism over the past 15 years and by Republicans is not conservative at all. Donald Trump stands for the same ideas that Abraham Lincoln promulgated when he was our first Republican elected president in this country, which is pro-Americanism. That is what the essence of conservatism in this country is. It is not pro-globalism. And that's very threatening when, you know, Wall Street bankers have no problem with a trade deficit because a lot of those trade deficit dollars end up in their hands and they get to invest those dollars and rake off huge fees. So they don't care if plants are being shuttered in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. That doesn't affect them. And on the other end, the companies they invest in increase their profitability when they offshore more production, when they import more cheap components from trade cheaters like China, South Korea, and Japan.
Right.
Donald Trump has been calling this out for decades, long before he entered politics.
Well, I wasn't suggesting that the current political class is or Republicans are necessarily conservative, but he doesn't necessarily have a track record as a conservative.
Well, Trump is more conservative. Look, he's about fundamental change. He's
right.
About
pro-American, national
security, and the Constitution, and putting the right people on the Supreme Court.
That's the positions he's taken now, but historically he's not, but that was my point. Hey, Lee, we're up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your thoughtful insights. Thanks for joining us.
Tony, always an honor. Thank you.
All right, Lee Speakerman. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be talking about what should we do as Christians given the choice that's before us? Stay on the sidelines? Or what should we do? We're going to talk about it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, March 9 through the 17th. We'll be going to the land of the Bible, the Holy Land. We'll be seeing so many places every day. The days are just full of things you've read about in the Bible. And one of the things that I enjoy about our trip is wearing people out. And we'll be wearing folks out during our trip of Israel, because I know that when folks pay to go to Israel, they want to see it all, and we'll be seeing it all, including Bethlehem, Jericho, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, Nazareth, and much, much more. Won't you join us on this special tour of Israel in March? For more information, just call us and we'll send you a brochure at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or go on the web at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
I've been listening to AFR Radio since 1991. It has helped me grow closer and closer to the Lord, and I just love the station. I keep it on in my home 24 hours a day. A year and a half ago, I lost my husband. He was killed in a car accident at a four-way stop. Someone ran a red light, hit the car on my husband's side, and it killed him. And I've had different medical things about it as well, but God has brought me through that. And through listening to AFR, I've had such comfort. It's just like someone else here. And I just love AFR. Thank you so much for being there and all the staff, and they're all so spirit-filled. I just thank the Lord and just praise God for all of you. And God bless you, and you all have a blessed day.
You can hear more stories of changed lives during our three-day Share-a-thon starting October 18th. American Family Radio, for your family.
To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, since Friday, in the release of a video of Donald Trump making lewd comments about women, reprehensible comments, I should say, some evangelical leaders have been encouraging voters to no longer support the GOP candidate, to basically boycott the top of the ticket or not vote. Is that the proper approach to this? What should we do? What is the biblical approach to this situation? Well, Don Black is president and CEO of Cornerstone Television Network. He's headquartered in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he joins us here at Washington Watch. Don, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Sonny. I'm so glad to be part of the show with you.
You're one of the leaders involved with a recent documentary entitled In God We Trust. You're familiar with this topic. As the broadcast that this documentary put together features insights from Pat Robertson, Robert Jeffress, Joyce Meyer, Andrew Womack, and others, inspiring viewers to pray, fast, and vote, and to consider the party platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
That's exactly, I believe that is our mandate as Christian leaders. We've been given a platform on which we operate, Tony. And that platform should be focused on the spiritual. You know, this is really a wrestling match between the spirit and the flesh. You know, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, the Bible says, but against spiritual powers in high places. This whole issue of who do we vote for is a spiritual issue. I mean, of course, we exercise the vote, but every one of our speakers, and we were so blessed to have all these different speakers join us. And I got to tell you, being broadcast across the country, just miraculously, so many television networks, Christian networks, and stations have picked up that special, that documentary. And it mandates exactly as you described. Christian leaders shouldn't use their platform, in my opinion, to focus on personal choices. They should focus the platform on biblical truths and on God's purposes.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a pastor friend of mine yesterday, and he said, I'm going to put out a message to all our campuses. And he said, I'm going to tell him that, you know what, I never voted for Bill Clinton. I didn't vote for George W. Bush. I didn't vote for John McCain. Didn't vote for Mitt Romney. In fact, I've always voted for biblical principles.
And
that's the way we're to approach this.
Well, you know, the truth of it is, I don't really care what any Christian leader has to say. What I want to know is what the Bible has to say. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're speaking in their office as a minister, I want to hear it from a biblical perspective. I'm not really interested in their personal choices, because their choices, I'm not in a position to judge. You know, I don't know all the truth and all the facts. And in this election, more than anyone I've ever lived through, the bias is just immense. So I don't know what all the truths are. So what I have to found my choices are is prayer, fasting, and then an informed vote. I've got to know what these candidates believe because of what their platforms believe. It's the platform that they're going to build their view of America upon, the platform that their party has. So I look at the platform. I encourage all of our people to look at the platform and look at the key issues and how do they line up from a biblical perspective.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those issues that are clearly biblical in nature. We talk about the sanctity of human life. Is that a moral, biblical issue?
Oh, absolutely. That's the number one biblical issue. If we can't protect life, then what is our calling?
Because
our calling
is to protect life. It's created in the image of God.
Created by God for his purpose for eternity.
Right.
And so that life in the womb, the Bible's clear on this. Psalms 139 is clear on this. From conception, you know, that's non-negotiable.
Let me go to the next issue that is a clear contrast between the parties on the issue of human sexuality and marriage. Is that a biblical issue?
The Bible defines marriage very clearly. If you look at Ephesians 5:25, it defines husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself for her. Clear. I mean, that's as clear as can be. Those are issues that we as Christian leaders need to say, this is what the Bible says. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to go out and tell somebody to vote for anyone. I don't tell people who to vote for. And people want to know. They say, Don, who are you going to vote for? That's my personal choice.
Before we run out of time, I want to hit some of these other issues, because all of these issues are at stake in this election. Let's talk about religious freedom. Should we be free to do everything to the glory of God, whether it's at work or whether it's at school or whether it's in our church?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the platforms says they want us to have freedom of religion. One wants us to have freedom to worship. Worship is contained within the four walls of the church. Religion spreads across the culture. I don't want to be contained to the four walls. I want to go into all the world and preach the gospel. I want to fulfill the Great Commission. And, Tony, that's the bottom line for me, and I think all Christians should be this. It's a bottom line. Which of the platforms makes it best possible for us, the church, to have the freedom to fulfill Jesus' Great Commission?
All right,
one of those platforms does that?
Well, I think it's becoming more clear as we talk about these issues. Let's talk about a parent and their responsibility to educate their children. Is it the parent's responsibility or the government's?
No, of course. The parent's responsibility, they're trusted with their children.
That's a biblical issue, right?
Yeah, it's a biblical issue. You've got to be a parent. You've got to be a father. You've got to be a mother to your children. That's God's mandate on us as parents.
So there are biblical...
It comes across... I'm sorry.
I was going to say there are clear biblical issues by which we should view the parties and their candidates that represent them when it comes time for us to vote.
And if we face this as spiritual issues, not natural issues, if we look at it and we say that we don't trust in politics, that's why we titled this television special, In God We Trust. Because we don't trust in politicians, we don't trust in the Supreme Court, we do not trust in Wall Street. Those are not where we place our faith. God has a plan for the world, Tony. You know what he has. It's complete. It's in place. Our responsibility and our only responsibility is to love God, obey him, and continue in our fight through prayer and fasting to take the gospel to the world. That's our mandate. Anytime we step out of that, we're out into our own world, and that's a dangerous place to be.
All right. We got to leave it there. Don Black, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, it's my great pleasure. God bless you and all the work that you're doing.
All right. Thank you, Don. Hey, to check out this documentary, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right. When we come back, one area of clear contrast that we touched on briefly in that list, we talk about when we come back with Kathy Roos. senior fellow for legal studies here at the Family Research Council. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
So we always look for indicators around the globe as it might impact the economy. Some of you might remember me saying some time ago that I believe what is going to happen is we're going to see realistic numbers come out of China. Now, they're not going to come out of China by way of the Chinese authorities. That's not going to happen. Remember, this is communist China. It's a dictator regime. And they say pretty much whatever they want to say because they're not held to any accountability standards. As a matter of fact, the local news is not allowed to report anything that might be counter to what the communist government says. So I believe that we are going to see some realistic numbers. China is going to really get in trouble economically, which it looks like they're headed that way. And that is going to lead to more struggles within Eurozone, which is obviously going to be a huge issue here for America. I used to think there was going to be some time between those events. China could maybe a month later lead to some issues with the Eurozone a couple months later, leading to some struggles here with the economy in America, not as if we're not having any anyway. But I don't think that timeline is very accurate today. I think things could happen a little bit more rapidly than we might have expected originally. We see the yuan, the currency in China, dramatically being manipulated on the downside. And we are also seeing a very important indicator of China. We are seeing a mass exodus of yuan out of China being converted to other global currencies. It looks like even the people in China are starting to panic a bit.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. I want to continue kind of the discussion of contrast. We were talking about the party platform and said, by the way, if you didn't join us yesterday, we actually went into greater detail on the party platforms. We have a great resource for you at TonyPerkins.com. Two resources, actually, on this topic. We've got a video, short 3-minute video that does a comparison of the party platforms, lays out the issues that are most important from a biblical perspective. And then we also have a printed sheet that does the comparison as well. So make use of that. But maybe more than any other presidential election, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have drastically different positions in regards to the United States Supreme Court and its role in society. Here to talk about this is Kathy Roos. She's Senior Fellow of Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be with you.
In Sunday night's debate, I think we got a very, very clear contrast between the two candidates on the Supreme Court, probably more than I've ever seen in the 20 years I've been involved in politics. Is it that obvious to the American public, you think, that the distinction between the two on the court?
Well, that's a good question. I agree with you that it seems a very stark choice. But, you know, it's hard to know what the public thinks about the court. The public tends to trust the court a lot more than we who are closely involved in it maybe think they ought to. So I've been disappointed in the past to see, you know, the people that don't tune in very carefully to how the court can impact their lives and in ways that it shouldn't, you know. So I don't know what the general public took from that. I hope they saw the contrast that we saw.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Name some of those contrasts. Describe the contrast between the two that is significant.
Well, on one issue that should be important to all Christians, and that's the issue of abortion. And, you know, the court has been absolutely lawless on abortion. And that is one of the subjects that Hillary Clinton waved a flag, saluting flag over in the debate. She has said many times that she will refuse to even consider a nominee to the court who does not swear to uphold Roe v. Wade, which a case which many, even on the left, Democrats, leftist lawyers and judges have come to believe is illegitimate, but not Hillary Clinton. So that's a litmus test for her. So she wants to perpetuate the unlimited abortion in this nation, and that is something she brings up all the time. She brings up, she has told Planned Parenthood, as president, I will have your back. So she's going to protect Planned Parenthood. It's a Planned Parenthood protection regime, and it is an abortion protection regime. That is the kind of justices that she will put on the court. And so that's devastating. Now, Donald Trump has said that he will appoint people in the mold of Justice Scalia. And everyone should know that Scalia was very clear about Roe v. Wade, that it was absolutely illegitimate. It had it should never have been ruled from the bench, and that it should be overturned. So that's a very clear distinction between these two candidates.
Yeah, Hillary said that, you know, I want a court that understands, understands you, doesn't understand, not understands the Constitution and the boundaries in which it operates, but a court that is sensitive to the people. She specifically said she wants to change the balance of the Supreme Court. What does that mean?
Right. Well, you know, for many, many years, Americans have really, I think, grown kind of accustomed to the idea that the court issues a 5-4 decision, and sometimes the left wins, and sometimes the right wins, and if we didn't win this year, then maybe next year the balance will swing a little bit. What Hillary Clinton is talking about is a radical transformation of the court. The next president could possibly change the balance so so significantly that we see 7-2 majorities on all of these crucial issues. And it is, frankly, Tony, difficult for the modern American mind even to imagine what a revolution-minded leftist court with a 7-2 majority could do to this country. It's difficult to imagine the things that could be taken away, the freedoms that could be taken away, if Hillary Clinton is allowed to create that kind of majority on the court. And recently I wrote a piece on this, and I just ticked through some of them. You know, outlawing, ruling that homeschooling is unconstitutional. You know, ruling that families who raise their children according to Christian sexual ethics are abusive to their children and what consequences could follow from that. You know, a court that would require all churches to hire or to allow women to serve as priests or ministers. I mean, it could be devastating what a revolution-minded leftist court could do. And we haven't seen courts like this, Tony, since the 1950s and 60s, really. So it is so scary what a court like that could do. And yet, and the way I like to talk about it is that if you think of all the crazy, crazy leftist policies that are cropping up on college campuses all across this country, mm-hmm. imagine those policies coming from the Supreme Court being imposed on all Americans. I mean, that's what we're considering, really.
All right, Kathy, we're out of time. Thanks so much once again for joining us. Appreciate your thoughtful insight. Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow of Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com, to find out more. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation that we started yesterday regarding the party platforms and how that might affect you. As we were talking earlier with Don Black, may it influence your vote? We'll talk about it. Don't go away.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Last week in the vice presidential debate, Mike Pence spoke passionately about the horror of partial birth abortion. As Pence stated, "But what I can't understand is with Hillary Clinton and now Senator Kaine at her side, to support a practice like partial birth abortion, the very idea that a child that is almost born into the world could still have their life taken from them is just anathema to me," unquote. Yet not only does Hillary Clinton oppose any restrictions on the murder of the unborn, she also thinks taxpayers should be forced to pay for it, vowing to repeal the Hyde Amendment. For 40 years, the Hyde Amendment has prohibited the use of tax dollars to fund abortion through Medicaid, saving 2 million lives. Elections have consequences. Will our culture continue down the path of death, or will we choose life? This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
On June 27th, in a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court struck down a basic, common-sense law that would have required abortion facilities to be held to the same standard as ambulatory surgical centers, and that abortionists have admitting privileges at a local hospital. Despite this setback, there are many pieces of legislation currently being offered that will protect unborn children and their mothers. For questions and answers on this Supreme Court decision, and for hopeful pro-life signs in the culture, visit frc.org/womenshealth.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, and we've got great resources there for you at that website, including a comparison of the party platforms, a video that covers it, as well as a printed document. You can print it out. It's a PDF. You can print it out and you know, show it to your friends. Just show where the parties stand on core issues, sanctity of human life, like we're talking about with Don Black, redefinition of marriage, religious liberty, conscience rights in health care, just the whole idea of God in government. Should we recognize God in government? Supreme Court, education, sex education, transgender bathrooms in the schools, social experimentation in our military, and on and on. That document, again, is at the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Several of you did not get a chance to call in yesterday as we were talking about this comparison of the party platforms. And I know we didn't talk about that comparison in great detail today, but we are talking about why Christians should vote. Now, I know, and by the way, let me give you the phone number, 866-372-7234. Some of you may be thinking of standing on the sidelines, not voting, because of the choice before you being, well, to put it nicely, less than desirable. What should you do as a Christian? And that's why we had that conversation with Don Black, that we vote, you know, not so much for a person, but for the platform, for these biblical values and who we think will either A, you know, most closely govern according to them in a positive way, or if we're in a bad situation, who will do the least amount of damage to those principles. In fact, I was talking to a reporter today who was saying, well, you know, a lot of politicians have jumped ship with Donald Trump, but a number of evangelical leaders have not. Why is that? And I said, well, you know, most evangelical leaders at this point in the process are not supporting a candidate because of who they are in terms of, you know, that they're just wedded to that individual. It's more about the policies they understand these things. And that's one of my frustrations where you see some evangelical leaders who are not really engaged in the political process at all. And you come down to a point like this and they start encouraging Christians because the choice is less than desirable just to step aside and not be involved. I think that's wrong, frankly. I think it's wrong. And here's why. You know, I may have touched on this yesterday when Jesus was asked about whether or not they should pay taxes. Remember what he said? He said, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's and to God those things which are God's. Well, you know, in that day and time, for a Jew to pay a tax or a tribute to Caesar, who Caesar, a man who declared himself God, they almost saw that as blasphemy. So they were trying to catch Jesus in something. But even Jesus recognized that we have a duty to government. In America, it's even more unique and distinct in that we are a government, as Abraham Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so we are the government, and we have an obligation to participate in the process. Now, some would say, I know, but look how bad the choice is before us. Okay, what's your point? How many times have you gotten to this point in an election cycle and the choice, you've been enthusiastic about it? Can I suggest to you that the reason we have choices that are less than desirable is because too many Christians don't get involved? And that we're not involved earlier on when we should be, like every day? I mean, just in the way we live, and that we encourage and support Christian candidates, we vote on a regular basis, we speak into these things. I'm not saying you do it full time, but we're full time salt and light. We're not just salt and light one day every 4 years. And to those Christian leaders who, you know, want to discourage people from voting because of the what they would call immoral choice before us, you know, I have to wonder, where are those folks on a regular basis when it comes to the political process and Christian citizenry? You know, were they out campaigning for one of the candidates that we had in the primary? We had a number of good Christian candidates. Were they out there involved? Most were not, because they don't want to get tarnished by the political process. And so they stay out. And then they just criticize those who are involved. And they discourage other Christians from getting involved. Folks, that's wrong. You know, Paul said that the church is like a body. One body, but many members. And, you know, depending on what the body might be doing, one member kind of takes the lead. Well, as I was describing to someone today, you know, for 20 years, I've been involved in the political process. FRC has been doing this for like 35 years. This is what we do based on the prayers and the support of folks like you across the country. That's what we do every day for you. And so when it comes time, you know, we know what we're talking about when we get engaged in this process. We're not speaking from some ivory tower somewhere. We're not speaking from, you know, a distance into the process. We're in the process each and every day, trying to defend and advance the things that, quite frankly, made America great, but really those things which will determine America's future. I can't be any more direct than this, folks, to tell you that I see America dangling by a thread over a raging fire. And some people may feel good about just absolving themselves of responsibility by abstaining from voting, but you know what? I call that moral cowardice. By not having to make a difficult decision. Again, a decision that, because collectively we as Christians have not been the salt and light we've been called to be. So I believe it comes down to, again, voting, as we were talking about earlier with Don Black, biblical principles, and that candidate will either do the least amount of damage to those principles or more closely aligned to them. Just my thoughts, but I felt I needed to share those with you today. All right, phone lines lit up. Let's Let's go to Mississippi, where Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. This is a talking point that I've not heard. Maybe I'm not listening at the right time or at the right places. But I'm wondering if we've ever considered that we are, you know, bringing judgments on ourselves by taking the Lord's name in vain, by lauding titles like One Nation Under God, and In God We Trust, yet we can't even define or describe who that is in the public square anymore. And we're doing things that are so diametrically opposed to what his commandments are, and we are flaunting all kind of moral corruption around the globe, not just on our own kids, but all over the world. And instead of being an ensign to the nation, we've become a stumbling block to the nation. So I'm wondering, you know, if a lot of these dissensions and strifes that we're experiencing are just a product of our taking the Lord's name in vain.
Very perceptive question. Jim, and it kind of reminds me of the Old Testament where, you know, the Jewish people were in trouble, and when there was trouble, they called the temple of the Lord, and they would use that as kind of a safety net, as a, you know, it was a hollow cry, because their hearts were not toward God, nor, you know, of course, the temple represented his presence at that time. Their heart was not there, but they used it just as to when they needed it. They pulled it out when they needed it. And I think you're right. God has been gracious to America. And for some, I mean, Jim, obviously for many of us, and I know you, I would put you in this category, and many of our listeners, when we say One Nation Under God, we know exactly what we mean, and we mean it. But as a nation, as we've embraced it, it does ring hollow when you look at the policies under that. I mean, I think about that quite often when I hear the president end a speech with or a message to the nation. He says, God bless America. Well, your policies sure do not invite God's blessing on America. Jim, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate the insightful, thought-provoking question. All right, let's go to Brenda in California. Brenda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Mr. Perkins. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Yes, something left me so uneasy. Obviously, yes, I'm going to vote for Trump. I still am. But during the debate, something that just kind of just, I couldn't sleep at night. He talked and spoke awfully nice or in favor of Russia and Syria. And then on the other hand, we have Hillary, who most likely will follow the Obama administration and support Iran. And, you know, I was just, you know, Lord, do we have, you know, either candidate that we go with potentially dealing with these countries, biblically speaking, that will, you know, eventually try to annihilate Israel? And that just kind of, you know, just left me a little uneasy, and I don't know if I'm wrong, but I believe Pence is against, you know, befriending Russia and Syria. So I just, that's just kind of sitting a little, you know, sore in the stomach.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, Brenda. I'm actually so, I'm encouraged that you, that folks are paying that close of attention, because that's a very, that's insightful, and it's worthy to explore. Internationally, things are just in an absolute mess. Now, I think that one thing that is clear is Donald Trump is supportive of Israel. Okay, I don't think Hillary Clinton speaks favorably of Israel. Now, how favorable will it be? I mean, certainly wasn't during her tenure as Secretary of State. I mean, they've had the rockiest relationship with the United States during the 8 years of Barack Obama, including the time when she was Secretary of State. There's a lot of bad actors on the international scene. And I, you know, it's worth being concerned about in some of the comments that Donald Trump has made regarding Putin. Putin is a bully. I take greater comfort in what Donald Trump's foreign policy would be based on who his running mate is, Mike Pence. Mike Pence, if you watched him in his debate, from my perspective, he's head and shoulders above all the candidates in this race, including the top candidates. And he understands these things, and I can tell you he's pro-Israel. So it should give us some solace that he would be, you know, by the side of Donald Trump if he were to be president, giving information and guidance. But Brendan, thanks so much for the call. And those are things that, you know, we all need to be praying about. All right, 866-372-7234. Oh wow, we're almost out of time. Let's go to Arkansas where Glenn is on the line. Glenn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you taking my call. One thing that I've just heard a lot of chatter about, especially amongst my friends and relatives, is you know, with this negative news about Trump, you know, hitting the stage, how can we as Christians, in all good conscience, vote for him as a candidate? The problem is when you look at, you know, the opposition, it really is cut and dry because I heard testimony by their former chief of staff, that being the Clinton administration, Larry Nichols. He testified that every 6 weeks when Bill was president, Hillary would fly off to a private jet to California where she would convene with her witch coven. This was just part of his, you know, testimony that, I mean, basically proves that she was an out-and-out practicing Satanist. That's just one of many knocks against the Clintons and the sordid history they've had. Being from Arkansas, we've had enough close and personal view of them for some time.
Well, Glenn, we're out of time, so we've got to leave it there. I don't know anything about, you know, her mode of transportation and what she does, you know. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. But Glenn, to your point, and this is what I've been saying, it is what we have before us in terms of choices. And again, the Washington Watch, none of our affiliates endorse any candidates. We're talking about issues. That's why I've stayed focused on the platform. Look at the platform. And which party, which candidates more align with the platform, with the platforms, which of those platforms align with more closely with biblical truth, biblical principles? And we know, and that we didn't talk about this today, we talked about it yesterday, Republicans 89% of the time vote with their party platform. Stephen F. Austin University in Texas did a study looking at 30 years worth of the platforms. 89% of the time the Republicans adhere to it. 74% of the time, the Democrats. That's both. That's pretty high percentage. Look at the party platforms. You know, take it out of the realm of individuals and personalities. Look at the platforms. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, folks, sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but we'll get to it tomorrow. All right, keep listening. Until then, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.